You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. I hope that you've had a great week. It's been a weird week. How about the Johnny Depp Amber Heard verdict? I mean, I felt like I invested so much time into trying to understand what was going on every week in the trial. And I feel like the net is, I don't think either one is great. You know, it's not as if I would want to sit down at a dinner table with either one. I don't know. I'm interested to see how we all feel about this trial a couple of years from now. But my gosh, my head is spinning from it. I also think that someone could successfully do a docuseries on all the people that were in the courtroom, all of the characters behind the scenes, because that would be entertaining. And I would be happy to executive produce that. Other things to watch this week, the Bobby Brown show on A&E, absolutely. And of course, in this episode, I cover the premiere of The Real Housewives of Dubai. Always excited for a new franchise because ultimately it's a window into another part of the world and a group of women that live in that specific city. In this case, we've gone abroad for the first time in 16 years. A Bravo show, you know, that it is created by the Bravo network. And I was interested and intrigued by the idea of this Arab city. So Brian Moylan, my friend, who is the author of the Real Housewives book and also really the director of the Real Housewives Institute, we deep dive into the premiere episode. And so I'm hoping that you watched it as well. And then I have an interview with the spectacular award-winning filmmaker, the executive producer, Nancy Armstrong, who made this incredible documentary on Apple TV Plus called The Disruptors. If you have a child with ADHD, if you are a coach, if you are a teacher, I'm telling you, this is for you. I have a child with ADHD, and at times it has been incredibly difficult. And I feel like the more I've been open about it, the more I find other families with children with it. And it's so helpful to know that someone else shares in your figuring out how to get the best path for your child. So what I loved about this documentary was it's a completely eye-opening, inspirational look at those that have ADHD. And it debunks a lot of the harmful myths. ADHD is one of the most commonly diagnosed and widely misunderstood neurological conditions in the world today. It affects nearly 10% of kids and a rising number of adults. I suspect it probably has way more than 10%. But what if having an ADHD brain is actually an asset? A growing number of innovators, entrepreneurs, CEOs, Olympic athletes, and award-winning artists have recently disclosed that their ADHD, managed effectively, has played a vital role in their success. So in this documentary, you hear from many of those game-changing people about their ADHD, and it takes an immersive look at the approach to ADHD that debunks those myths and ultimately takes viewers inside a number of families as they navigate the challenges and surprising triumphs of living with ADHD. So some of the most famous people in history had ADHD. Vincent van Gogh, Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Edison, Ansel Adams, Albert Einstein, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Norman Schwarzkopf. This features award-winning American rapper and producer will.i.am, Paris Hilton, Hall of Fame astronaut Scott Kelly, comedian, actor, and television host Howie Mandel, JetBlue founder David Neeleman, three-time Olympian Michelle Carter, fashion designer and businessman Steve Madden, personal trainer and television personality Jillian Michaels, former professional football player Terry Bradshaw, former chairman and CEO of AOL Tim Armstrong, and entrepreneur and Wheels Up CEO Kenny Dichter. So an impressive list of celebrities who are being open about their own struggles. And again, I think if you know someone with ADHD, this is something great to watch. So it's a really good week in TV. And I just have to tell you, I have already watched, it will come out next week on Netflix, this extremely well done docuseries called Keep Sweet about the FLDS, the Fundamental Latter-day Saints, and the struggle of the women and the men in that community at the hands of Warren Jeffs. And for those of you like myself that have read so much about the FLDS, there's so much more new information uncovered that you will find spellbinding. So that's called Keep Sweet, and that's coming out next week. And also, there's a forthcoming HBO documentary about Menudo that you guys are going to go crazy for. So rest assured, this summer, there's plenty to watch. You also should check out my episode on Wednesday, which is a list of the best documentaries and docu-series in sports, especially as Father's Day approaches. Use this as a guide. It's going to be long summer nights. You're going to want to have things to watch. And I'm telling you that this is beyond sports. These personal stories of these incredible athletes, you're going to love it. So make sure you check out that list. And also make sure you check out my live show at the Irvine Improv on July 13th. I want to see your faces. Come, I've got special guests. You're going to love it. So make sure you get your tickets now. And again, this episode is a deep dive into The Real Housewives of Dubai premiere. And of course, the interview with the executive director of The Disruptors, Miss Nancy Armstrong. So here we go. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KKC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KKC to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KKC. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmerman dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. For the first time in its 16-year history, The Real Housewives American franchise is bringing stories of glamorous women abroad in the skyscraper-covered land of sheiks, Dubai. Now, before you scream at me, while the franchise has sold countless global spinoffs from Lagos to Vancouver, none have been produced by the Bravo network before. This is the first one that's been filmed abroad. So back to join me, the head of the Real Housewives Institute and the author of The Housewives, The Real Story of the Real Housewives, my friend, Brian J. Moylan. Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you, as always, for having me. It's such a pleasure always to chat Housewives with you.
Especially because you live abroad and we are talking about the first franchise abroad. Were you excited at the idea of leaving America and finding another pocket of the world?
I was, especially a Bravo one, because a lot of the international editions haven't been that great, with the exception of Melbourne, which is, I mean, if you haven't watched it, give Gina Liano a chance.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. So Dubai is zero income taxes. It was engineered to be a global destination for the ultra wealthy and gleaming skyscrapers and countless malls. And who doesn't love a mall? Fortune seekers, rich and poor, are coming to Dubai from really around the world. But that includes migrant laborers from South Asia, Africa, and the Philippines who work long hours for low pay. So this franchise focuses on a very tiny subset of wealthy women in this very interesting city. So I would love to just walk through the cast, since this is the premiere episode. So first, we've got Nina, born in Lebanon and raised in Texas, highly driven businesswoman and entrepreneur, moved to Dubai with her husband in 2011. It was there that she co-founded her premium fruitcake business, three kids. Brian, what do you think of Nina?
The fruitcake is hers. I was like, what kind of entrepreneur is she? Whenever somebody has the title of entrepreneur on a Housewives show, I like call the feds, because it's like Russell Armstrong,
right?
Joju DJ, Brooks Ayers. These are all the entrepreneurs that we're used to.
Yes.
And so I was like, entrepreneur, but at least it's fruitcakes. Okay. I'm like dealing with fruitcakes. She seems not for this world.
No.
Like, she seems like, when she was at Caroline's dinner, she was like, oh, let's not fight here. And it's like, bitch, do you know what
I don't think she does know about the show. And every interview I've ever seen her, she seems so contained, so introspective. And I often think to myself, were you given the script? Were you given the notes on what the show is about? Because clearly you signed up for the wrong one.
Yeah, no, she doesn't seem like, I feel like she might be a one and done.
One and done. Okay, Chanel Ayan is Kenyan-born, Somalian-Ethiopian supermodel and businesswoman, taking Dubai by storm, developing a skincare line. I did think when I saw her, number one, she looks just like David Bowie's wife, Iman.
Yes.
I did think to myself, that's one of the most beautiful women that I've ever seen. But I also kept thinking, do I need to hear about it all the time?
Yes. And she's always talking about it. And she also does this thing where she says, you know, in all these different languages, and she goes, I just said I'm a badass bitch in four languages. And you know who doesn't need to tell you they're a badass bitch? A badass bitch. So like, she's always like, I'm so fierce, I'm so glamorous. And it's in writing class, the first thing you learn is show, don't tell. And so I want more showing from Chanel Ayan and less telling.
So then we have the daughter of two immigrant parents from Honduras, Caroline Brooks, proud first-generation American and Afro-Latina with appetite for business. So in 2010, she and her now ex-husband relocated from Massachusetts to Dubai. While they were married, she served as the marketing manager for his group of companies, giving her a taste of what it was like to run a major business in the Emirates. After they separated, the single mom was determined to find financial independence, becoming one of the first female real estate directors in the area. But in recent years, she made a shift into the beauty sector with Glass House Salon and Spa, a luxury salon that caters to women of all colors, hair textures, and skin types. Thoughts on Caroline Brooks?
I love how they said, they showed each woman and they gave her like, oh, here's where she's from, married, divorced, whatever. And then they said her job, and hers was / spa enthusiast. And I was like, girl, I'm a spa enthusiast. Is that my job too? It's like when they show me, it's going to be like Brian Moylan, bath taker. Like that's my new, That's my new job. You know, like, okay, I'm a spa enthusiast too. That's my job. But I like Caroline Brooks. She seems the opposite in that her and Chanel Ayan both seem to have really studied the Housewives playbook.
Yes, yes.
And are a little too
savvy.
yeah, a little too into the fighting. And speaking of international editions, the worst of all international editions is Real Housewives of Sydney, because all the women showed up and they're like, this is the character I'm playing.
Yes.
I'm here to fight. Mm-hmm. Like, here's what's going on. And I'm feeling like half of the women on this are those women.
Yeah.
And half like don't know where they are. And so it's not, it doesn't bode well for the future of the franchise.
Well, also perhaps someone like Nina is excited about the possibility of promoting her business and getting international attention while also hearing the voices of all the people in Dubai in the other ear going, oh my God, this is such an embarrassment to everyone who lives here. I feel like that would be someone like my sister. Like my sister always sees Real Housewives of New Jersey and she comments that it's such an embarrassment to the state. And I'm like, they're not representing you.
Right. Yes. And that's the thing about people who say that. It's like, we don't think everyone in New Jersey is like
Teresa Giudice. No.
Right. Like we know that there's or we don't think that everybody in Beverly Hills is like the Housewives, even though most of them don't even live in Beverly Hills. So
yeah.
But I feel like with Dubai, not a lot of people know about it, have been there, whatever. So they might think that this is what Dubai is actually like.
I kept thinking, since she relocated from Massachusetts, there's going to be at least 1 to 2 episodes where we take the jaunt back to, you know, Salem or whatever town she's from to see like her high school, right? Or her middle school. Yeah. And then we flash back to Dubai where she's like sitting on a gold throne. You know what I mean? Like the juxtaposition of those two places.
Yes. Remember how awful the Real Housewives of New York trip to Salem was? I just wanted to bring
yeah, exactly.
that up. Just want to revisit you with that trauma, that recent trauma.
I mean, absolutely. And I also kept thinking of like, our one glimpse at Dubai was that trip that the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills took. And then thinking about all the shitty trips that like the Real Housewives of Orange County took. It'd be like staying at a motel in, you know, Rosarito or something.
Yeah, they're at like a La Quinta in Cincinnati.
Exactly. Okay, yeah. Then we've got an Emirati local, Sara Al-Madani. By the way, so beautiful. Multi-award winning serial entrepreneur, again, and with the serial entrepreneur. I love that. Because it's like, you know, my husband is an entrepreneur too. You never see him put a title as serial entrepreneur. It just is like, looks stupid. Anyway, it's a serial entrepreneur renowned in the UAE. She started her first business at the age of 15. I love that too when people tell you that. My first business, it's like, that's the same thing that Emma on Selling Sunset says. Like, I started my first business at 14. It's like, oh, really? And did you file that corporation's name? Did you pay taxes on it? Like, enough of that.
Right. Like, I was a paper boy at 9. That was my first business.
Like, who goes into a meeting with, like, colleagues? I just want you to know, my first job was I was working at a health club cleaning equipment. No one gives a shit. It's not enough. She's now a prolific public speaker. Thoughts on Sara, the only local?
I like Sara. I feel like they needed her because they needed one Emirati. And she was the one who would actually do it. Because I feel like there was probably a lot of resistance amongst the locals to do this.
Yeah.
But I like that she is not the traditional. She's showing like a different side of it. Mm-hmm. We don't see a lot of her. So I'm curious to see how she's going to interact with the other women.
Then we have, originally from Jamaica, Lisa Milan Hall is a successful fashion designer and entrepreneur, again, with entrepreneur, living out her dreams in Dubai. Former Miss Jamaica winner is the founder and chief designer of a luxury maternity fashion brand, Mina Rowe, and mother of 3. Talk about another gorgeous, like these women are, this is probably the most beautiful cast of Housewives I've ever seen.
Absolutely. And I love that they are very diverse, not just in terms of ethnicity, but where they're from in the world. You know, we have, you know, Jamaican Americans and Africans and
Lebanese.
And so, yeah, I like that we have a show that's very diverse from the get-go, like Salt Lake was. But my favorite thing about Lisa is her big thing in the premiere is that it's too hot in her swimming pool. So she pays like all this money to have giant ice chunks brought in and put in her pool to cool the pool down. And then at night, they're like roasting s'mores at a campfire. It's like, bitch, what do you want, it hot? Do you want it cold? What's going on? They're like camping in the backyard. I'm like, I thought it was 120 degrees. What is wrong with you? You're crazy. But the husband is hot. He's extremely cute. Yeah, very hot and British.
Well, I watched this one video, did some due diligence, and they met while they were at a nightclub in Miami. I think the club's name was like Live, maybe.
Yes.
And it wasn't Love at First Sight. It was Lust at First Sight. So they said it was Lust at Live. So I love the way that they have a great banter between one another.
Yeah.
And you get the feeling they're hot and heavy still.
Yeah. And the kids are super cute. And yeah, so I'm into Lisa. She seems like a good balance between... She seems like a Candy Burris type. Like,
yes.
If you fuck with her, she's not going to come for it, but also very level-headed and relatable.
Which, again, that could be a problem for a show like Real Housewives to be level-headed. Okay, then yeah. We have last, born and raised in London, Caroline Stanbury now resides in Dubai with her new husband, former Real Madrid soccer player, Sergio Corallo, and her three children. Do you know that I was at the same event with her on the night that he met her?
No, where did they meet?
So she had flown to Newport Beach to do this event. And it was like, come meet Caroline Stanbury and find out the Caroline way of life. And there were a bunch of really super cute soccer players there. And so she met him that night. She says that they kept in touch and that when she figured out that she wanted a divorce, they got back in touch. But I mean, looking at those two and their lust for one another, you get the feeling like they met once, they never let each other go.
Yeah. He is also hot and enjoys parading around with the top off. And I am here for the hot husbands of Dubai.
I always like looking at her things, her clothing, her house. I mean, I could have just taken a Caroline Stanbury show in Dubai, but this is like an added bonus with all these other stories.
Absolutely. And I mean, she was great on Ladies of London. She's good television. In the UK, she's a bit like, she was like an It Girl in the 2000s, kind of like a Tinsley Mortimer type, like a tabloid kind of fixture. So I'm here for Caroline Stanbury. And she was the best thing about Ladies of London. So I'm glad that we have her back on our television. I'm a little worried that when they dropped the trailer, we saw very little of her. So I'm wondering if she's going to deliver as much as we hope she is.
Yeah. And it did seem like they didn't film for very long. And it also, they made it seem like they didn't even know each other, the women, before they started filming. So I'm a little bit worried on the long course of it all. Like, are they going to have some sort of connectedness? Because it doesn't necessarily seem like it thus far. That said, ultimately, this is telling the story of six modern women living in an Arab city. That, to me, is very interesting. Because
yes.
I love a show that gives us a peek into another pocket of the world. And it's interesting that one is an Emirati local and the others are expats. And then I found out that Dubai is a country where expats outnumber locals nearly 9-1.
From what I understand, it's kind of like Singapore, where it's like they let other people in, but they don't have like equal status. Like we saw in the episode that Brooks had to apply to live in an Emirati neighborhood. And so, I think that that's, and I also think that they reap some of the benefits from, you know, all the money that's coming into there. And so I think it behooves them to stay, but there's only a small number of them. So if you want a giant city, you got to like bring all the people in. And so that's why there are so many expats. But I can't imagine wanting to move to Dubai and stay there.
I know. I feel like a lot of people that I've known that have visited there have said they've enjoyed it, but they wouldn't necessarily want to live there. Although what you get out of it financially could be an incentive.
Yeah.
But I want to go over some of the things that have given this show some backlash. Because, of course, we're going to weigh that they all seem like really interesting women. It's another part of the world. modern woman story in an Arab city, but in the UAE, women are legally obligated to obey their husbands under the nation's Islamic law. Despite major legal changes, cursing, drinking, and kissing in public can land you in trouble. Authorities stamp out hints of political dissent. Troublesome. Women are asked to dress modestly in public areas like shopping malls. Clothes should cover the tops of the arms and legs, and underwear should not be visible. Swimming attire should be worn only on beaches or at swimming pools. Cross-dressing is illegal. In late 2020, the UAE government relaxed a series of laws in a major legal overhaul, it should be noted. In addition to lifting the ban on unmarried couples cohabitating, alcohol consumption and suicide was decriminalized. Furthermore, protections for women's rights increased, notably individuals who carry out honor killings for which a male relative could previously receive a lighter sentence for assaulting or killing a female relative under the pretext of protecting honor now face life imprisonment or the death penalty, as they should. Now, Caroline had to flee Dubai for Mauritius to marry her husband before exchanging ideas. And then for a second time, they had a celebratory affair held at a resort in Dubai. At the time, their marriage wouldn't have been legally binding in the UAE as the country had yet to recognize the interfaith civil unions. She's Jewish, he's Catholic. That law has been amended, allowing for UAE residents, tourists, and visitors of different religions to get married, provided that couples are non-Muslims or citizens of a non-Muslim country. And then finally, it should be noted that there are existing UAE laws that put into resident queer community at risk. Same-sex marriages are still not permitted. Consensual same-sex intimacy is illegal. And LGBTQIA plus people are not allowed to serve openly in the military among more anti-queer jurisprudence. The government is also known to promote conversion therapy to reverse one's sexuality or gender expression. The harmful practice, which can sometimes involve forms of emotional and physical abuse, is shown to increase depression, anxiety, substance abuse, and even suicide. So, the cast is hoping to show, they have said, that Dubai is diverse and certainly that they are not submissive women. But how do we wrestle that as viewers, watching this small subset of women that are obviously very privileged, very wealthy, knowing that it's a part of the world where not everyone has equal freedoms?
So earlier last week, a group of 14 human rights organizations sent an open letter to all the executive producers, including Andy Cohen and the heads of the network, you know, listing a bunch of these things, highlighting the misogyny and homophobia that's going on there. And they had like a four-step thing that they wanted Bravo to comply with. And the first was saying whether or not the government of the UAE invested any money in this or gave them any money to produce it there. Two, like running a disclaimer at the beginning of the episode saying that they don't agree with these policies. Three, that they donate some of the money that they've earned from this to human rights organizations. And like, I don't think any of those three things are ever going to happen. But I do think that number four was educating Housewives fans about what goes on there. And I think just by having these conversations, we're doing that. And also the things we see on the show, like Caroline can't have penis straws at her bachelorette party because that's illegal. She can't have a stripper at her bachelorette party because that's illegal. And so I'm hoping that, or when they talk about her marriage, like people see that and be like, that's fucked up. So rather than being like, oh, Dubai's great, you're like, I don't want to live there. That seems stupid. So I'm hoping that we're going to get some of that and it's not going to end up glamorizing it because, you know, it's like Andy Cohen can't even take his twink of the month to film the reunion in Dubai or else he's going to go to jail. So like, you know, yeah. So it's kind of, it's hard to balance our love of housewives with our, you know, social conscience sometimes. So I'm hoping that we're going to get some benefit from drawing attention to the negativity that's happening in the UAE.
It's definitely hard to wrestle. I did see some official came out and did this video. By the way, it was like in his car. It was very strange. But he said, you know, my wife is a housewife and she's at home. And I thought, you know, for him to say that and to put these women down who all have businesses, you know, maybe that's the silver lining is that we're telling a very modern story here.
Yeah.
And Caroline did say that a lot of the laws are changing quickly. So I don't know, maybe putting a spotlight on this part of the world can really make some changes happen. I know it might seem crazy, but you know, crazier things have happened.
Yeah. Well, I fucking hate that criticism. Because what I always say is, it's not called the Housewives of Dubai. It's called the Real Housewives of Dubai. Right. A real housewife is not a housewife. A real housewife has a job and a business and kids and is on a show. And a housewife is Donna Reed. Like, you know, so it drives me crazy. These people, these Johnny come latelys and their criticism. But yeah, no, I agree with you. And I hope that that's the case. And yeah. And I have heard from people that even the laws against, LGBTQIA plus people might be changing in the near future, but it's like, I don't even want to go to Dubai. I mean, Grindr doesn't even work there, girl. You can't even look at gay pornography.
Oh, I bet not. Absolutely not. So I guess our feeling, it sounds to me that we're both feeling the same way, is that we're eager to see where it goes.
Yeah.
I hope that, and this is the plight of every producer that makes one of these shows, is that you're hoping that real authentic stories unfold and real true connections. So I'm a little bit worried because it doesn't seem like they knew each other. And to your point, it does seem like at least two have studied the manual. So yeah. I'm hoping that by the end of this, we're going to feel like we were wrong.
Because I didn't see any genuine stories here. And I also feel like, I think producers and the women think we want fighting right off the bat. And it's
we don't want
drama. We want you to get to know each other. And if you're like all hunky-dory with each other at first, like when you meet new people and you're just sussing them out, that's cool. Like, wait to have a reason to hate somebody rather than Caroline and Ion are just kind of like, I don't like you. Yeah. You know, it's like, that's not interesting. At least Jen Shaw waited until Mary Cosby was like, you smell like hospital, to hate her. You
that's
know,
true.
It took
that's
like
true.
An episode and a half, but it happened, you know? Yeah. So give it time, people.
Give it time. Let it, yeah, I agree. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, so good. So favorite thing and maybe the thing that you are hoping from for this season.
My favorite thing, other than hot husbands and the diversity, was I did enjoy the way it looks. Like, it seems like a different kind of housewife show where it almost seems like a Shonda Rhimes show where there's lots of like quick cuts and split screens and, you know, things like that. It's like a lot jazzier.
Sophisticated, and, yes.
Yeah, and I enjoy that for our housewives, and maybe we can see some of that go in to some of the other shows. So I really like that a lot. My least favorite thing is that they're all in the same fucking chair to do their confessionals.
Okay, like, agreed. Agreed.
I mean, how many champagne farts did that chair have to suck in during all of that filming? I mean, yeah, that was weird that they're all in the same room giving their confessionals. Like, I mean, use a green screen and make it look like somewhere else. I don't know why they did that. That seems like an odd production choice to me.
Agreed. I like the idea that we're exploring a different part of the world. And really, I think that ultimately stories like this make us think about gender, equality throughout the world. I'm hoping for some really rich storytelling. I think that it's so glamorous and so beautiful, but I also want to hear someone say something like, I may have all of this, but I'm struggling with XYZ. Because ultimately, I think if the whole show is, I have a fabulous life and I have more money than you can imagine, and I'm just intent on making more, I think it's going to make us, you know, we'll lose the people in the process.
Yeah, no, totally. Because even in like Beverly Hills, where they seem to have like the most money, you know, they're still dealing with real issues, I think. Yeah, because if it's just like rich women doing things, it's like a snooze fest. So,
we know from you, all too well. Yeah.
yes. So, you know, maybe one of them will get arrested or that's what it takes these days.
My last question is to just think for a moment the difference between the shots that were taken by the producers in the first season of Real Housewives of Orange County, you know, including a reunion which was held in the grotto in Vicky's backyard on those ugly Home Depot outdoor chairs.
Oh my God.
Compared to today that we're in Dubai with the same chair with women that almost look like avatars. They're so perfect. They're so beautiful.
Yes.
How has this show, since you are heading this institute, have written a book, in a short sentence or two, how do you think this show has changed?
I mean, I think it changed from the idea of wealthy people to actual wealthy people.
I think you're right.
You know, like Vicky and them, like they were doing all right, but they're not like,
no way.
And their houses probably cost a couple million dollars, but they're not like 20 million. They weren't living in the Burj Khalifa like
that's cats. True.
Yeah. And so it's. And I also think that the women know what they can get out of this. Whereas like Vicky and them, they kind of like just luck did it. And, oh, look, it's successful. Whereas now these women come in with a plan. They come in with the playbook.
True.
They want to promote their business. They want to get followers. They want to do whatever. And so I think that the motivation and so the way that they're behaving and what they're looking to get out of the experience is really different than, you know, like Tammy Knickerbocker being like, oh, this seems fun.
That's right. She does say. Tell everybody where they can get your book because this is a perfect summer read. Oh my God, the kids are getting out of school. People have vacation times that they've saved all year. They're going to be on the beach. Where can they find your book?
You can get it everywhere books are sold. You can find it at thehousewivesbook.com. It just came out in paperback. With some additions and updates, including to the list of all the housewives who've been arrested since there have been several since the book got published. Check that out. It's nice and cheap now. Bring it to the beach, leave it in the sand. Who cares? It's a paperback.
And then where can they find your beautifully written pieces and on social media?
I am at Brian J. Moylan on all platforms. So you can find me there. And then I write about Beverly Hills and I'm going to do Ultimate Girls Trip 2 and Southern Charm on Vulture. So those are always up like right after the episode airs. And you can also subscribe to my every other week newsletter called the Housewives Institute Bulletin at vulture.com/housewives. Oh,
thank you.
Girl, so much housewives.
So much housewives, and it can never get enough. Thank you so much, my friend.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for making this because I am also a parent with a child with ADHD. And this is not only just informative, but very empowering. So first tell me how this documentary was developed.
Well, I raised three children with ADHD, and it was an incredibly challenging and sometimes overwhelming journey. And it always struck me that there was no definitive film about, you know, on this topic. There's films on every other topic under the sun, but no sort of definitive, comprehensive documentary with the world's experts following several families and offering a really a broad view of what ADHD is. And I think part of the problem around ADHD is that there's a deep disconnect between what the public perception of ADHD is broadly and what we actually know about ADHD from decades of research, hundreds, if not thousands of studies. And what we know is it's neurological. We know what part of the brain it affects. We know it's highly heritable. And now from leading experts around the country, we know that while ADHD does have challenges that need to be managed, it also has some pretty impressive strengths. And if you can find a path in life to activate and accelerate those strengths, ADHD can be a huge asset.
I was really excited to see so many celebrities and people that are massively successful in business participated in this and told their story. How was it to find these celebrities? How eager were they to participate?
Well, it's interesting. I'd say the reason that they either did participate or didn't participate is exactly the same reason. And that is the stigma around ADHD. Mm. So I'd say everyone that participated thought it was high time that we dismantled this stigma around ADHD. And the reason is because all of the people that participated in the documentary that are very successful are people that struggled during their childhood. They all have the same story of struggle or varying degrees of struggle, but definitely no one sailed through childhood unscathed in that group. And then secondly, they learned how to leverage the power of their brain. And all of them believe that we should not have a stigma around neurodiversity in general, that not everyone's brain is wired the same way and works the same way. And in order to build a society of entrepreneurs and creators and explorers, you know, the ADHD brain is geared more toward that than it is toward sort of, you know, more linear thinking. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, linear thinking isn't really what changes the world. It's this outside the box thinking. It's recognizing opportunities where others don't see them. It's taking big risks where other people might not want to take such a big risk. They're wired to do that. That's just natural to them. It would be unnatural not to do those things. So I think, you know, in a society like this one, we need to embrace neurodiversity because that's where, you know, change comes about. People that didn't want to do it were concerned about that stigma being harmful to their brand in some way, which I can understand. Mm-hmm. You know, why should they trust me and Atlas Films? Although I will say me and Atlas Films both have pretty good track records in terms of the content we've created. Atlas Films is an award-winning film company. Stephanie Suchtig and Kristen Lazur are, you know, brilliant filmmakers and have done incredible award-winning docs on different topics. So I knew I wanted to work with them. And then I have my own reputation in the kind of online content I'd created. But why would they necessarily, if they felt it was going to harm their brand in some way, trust us to put them on film talking to camera about their ADHD? It's a very vulnerable position. So I understand why we got some no's, but we got a lot of yeses and a lot of passionate people who wanted us to do this film.
Have any of the people that said no to it initially watched it and then come back to you and said, I'm so grateful that this is out there because this would have been enormously helpful to me and to my parents when I was growing up?
Not yet.
They will. Yet. They will.
But I will say I've gotten letters from parents all over the country saying that thank you for making the film. We mm-hmm. finally feel seen. This is so inspiring. And, you know, this is the film I needed when I was raising three children. So I know exactly the journey these parents are on. It is, you know, 24/7, 365, every day feels like Groundhog Day.
Right.
You know, that alarm goes off at 6 a.m. and you mm-hmm. start whimpering because, you know, it's nothing will change from yesterday. And that's just kind of the nature of raising a child with ADHD. You just have to kind of slog through it and know that it will get easier as they get older. And it does. It's hard to believe when you're in the throes of it, but it actually, when, you know, Mother Nature pulls them into adulthood, and the more mature their brain gets, the easier it is, particularly if they feel good about themselves. If you've been supporting them and telling them they have a bright future and they just need to focus on their strengths, and those strengths are not going to be appreciated in K through 12, which is what I told, you know, my son. I said, they're never going to appreciate these things, but that's okay. K through 12 is a finite period of time. And then you have the rest of your life to explore and leverage those strengths in the world. And I promise you, those strengths will be appreciated in the world. So my son had a very, very difficult experience, particularly in middle school. It was so brutal between the bullying and the teachers' disapproval. And, you know, the thing is that teachers have so much power in the classroom. So they can do so much good for these kids, or it can go the other direction. You know, if a teacher believes in you and understands you and understands you have a neurological difference, they can put you in the front of the classroom. They can employ some techniques that make learning just a little bit easier for you, and you can really accomplish the same things as anyone else in the class. Or they can give up on you, disapprove of you, that the rest of the students take note of that. It's not only that they're implanting an idea in the child's brain who actually has ADHD, but also in the brain of every other child in the class.
Right.
That this person is not worthwhile. This person will never amount to anything. People who act like this aren't going anywhere in life. So I don't want to be hard on teachers because they have a difficult job and sometimes 20 to 30 kids in the classroom. The big takeaway is that they need education. Mm-hmm. And they don't get it. And that's not their fault. That should be like the school district should really provide ongoing education on ADHD. It's 10% of the kids that will be in their class at a minimum. So they really need education. But so I had to tell my son, you know, various times during that time period that he was going to be great in life and that this was just going to be a difficult time period, that middle school was going to be terrible. High school was probably going to be mostly terrible and maybe a little better towards junior and senior year, but he would just have to get through it. And I would be there with him to get through it. And the other side was going to be better. And I promised that. And, you know, when he graduated high school, he said, I can't even say it. It makes me so upset. He said, I would have never gotten here without you.
I like that you focused on those adults that have ADHD that are successful in several different industries, because it would be easy to say, like in my daughter's case, she's highly creative. She's a painter. But you have, you know, the CEO for JetBlue. You have a musician. And it just shows you the broad spectrum of adults even that are that have ADHD and probably have no idea. I feel like this should be seen by not just every parent who has a child with ADHD, but really every teacher, every school, every clinic, anyone who works with children. This is tremendously helpful. Coaches, you have really made something that is really giving us our own superpower as those that take care of children, especially those of us that are parenting them. So I first want to say thank you and congratulate you. And I hope to God you get an Academy Award for this because you so deserve it. What do you hope for this project, and what do you want people to take away as the most important takeaway?
Well, I think this film has the power to help millions of kids, you know, all over the country and all over the world, because it can transform lives. You know, from thinking you're not capable of doing anything because that's what you've been told your whole childhood, to understanding that you can do great things. There are so many careers that are ideally suited to someone with ADHD. And you talked about a couple of them: entrepreneurs, musicians, artists, but also anything with a high stimulation environment. So an ER doctor, that's perfect for someone with ADHD. A firefighter, anything where the dopamine flies because of the situation. Those careers are all great for people with ADHD. And someone neurotypical might say, I'm not going into a burning building, or I can't take care of like 20 people at one time bleeding to death. Someone with ADHD, that's when they come alive. That's when their brain kicks into, you know, what's been described as the feel-good gear.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to a surgeon, one of the girls in the film. Her father is a surgeon, and through the film, he was diagnosed. And he said the best feeling he has is when he's in the middle of a surgery. That's when his brain feels the best.
So this can be watched on Apple TV. Where can people find more information on the Disruptors?
Disruptorsfilm.com.
Thank you so much, Nancy.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
I want to thank my great guests, Nancy and Brian, and remind you to click subscribe, leave a 5-star review, join the Facebook group Reality Life with Kate Casey. You can find me on Twitter at Kate Casey, Instagram at Kate Casey CA. You can find me on TikTok at It's Kate Casey. Make sure you check me out on TikTok. You can find me on Cameo at Kate Casey, and the Patreon page with bonus episodes is at Patreon, patreon.com/KateCasey. And also that must-watch list of what to watch every week can be found at katecasey.substack.com. Don't miss it. Every Monday, you will get a guide to what to watch each week. Looking forward to catching up with you next week.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.